TME. You're listening to Tell Me Everything on Sirius XM Progress 127.
If Democrats began to fight for small businesses, they could reconfigure the political map, becoming more competitive in rural areas and heartland cities by defining a politics that knits people together around a vision of freedom from corporate domination. So writes our next guest, the great Stacey Mitchell, in a terrific new article, Why the Left Should Ally with Small Businesses. Stacey Mitchell is the co-executive director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, which produces research and advocates policies that go against concentrated power and go for stronger local economies. You may have read her stuff previously in The Atlantic or Bloomberg or Washington Monthly, or seen her on or heard her on Chris Hayes's Why Is This Happening? She has a great TED Talk called Why We Can't Shop Our Way to a Better Economy. And this piece is as inspiring as it is eye-opening. What a pleasure to welcome Stacey Mitchell to Sirius XM Progress.
So nice to be with you. Thanks.
So nice to be with you, and thank you for writing this piece. You know, there's so much to unpack here. Like, independent pharmacies, for example, offer significantly lower drug prices, make fewer mistakes, and give you better health care than bigger chains like Walgreens or Walmart. And yet local pharmacies are declining in number, and their market share has fallen to like 18%. So it might seem strange to take on your central premise. How can it be that, you know, the small businesses are superior and yet losing ground?
Well, we see this, you know, if you go looking in sector after sector in the economy, you know, we have this story that small businesses are disappearing because they can't compete. But when you take a closer look, what you often find is that there are gross abuses of market power, that you have these giant companies that are vertically integrated, that control access to markets. And they're essentially able to use that power to stamp out these small businesses and also to really rig government in a number of ways so that policy works to create an unlevel playing field.
Exactly.
So we walk around and we see, you know, that shuttered local pharmacy and we think, oh, well, they just couldn't compete. But in reality, there is a set of monopolistic practices going on behind the scenes that has effectively crushed that business.
That's why I think your piece is so brilliant, and it's such a smart political and moral call for Democratic support. I mean, small banks outperform big banks in many key metrics. They usually have lower fees. Smaller banks have better interest rates. Smaller banks can devote more of their capital to productive community-based lending. And yet we've seen one-third of local banks disappear in the last decade. And this, as you mentioned, goes across the economy. Cattle ranchers, they're being squeezed by the four corporations that dominate all beef processing. Craft breweries have revolutionized beer drinking, but they've been blocked from supermarket shelves in many states because the big guys control all the wholesale distribution. You had an article for The Nation recently where you said for decades, the Democratic Party counted small businesses as a core constituency and made their welfare a central concern of its policy agenda. This fact surprises many today because it's a history long ago abandoned. I love the way you express this painful history. For those who aren't familiar with this, what happened around the 1970s?
Yeah, it's, you know, it is a surprising history for many people because we traditionally think of labor and small businesses being on opposite sides, but they were allied, you know, throughout, you know, 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, up until the 70s. Small businesses, farmers, and organized labor were the base of the Democratic Party. They were allied in this fight against corporate power and for a more kind of democratic economy, if you will. And that all came undone in the 1970s. You know, there was this ascendant idea on the right, but also among an increasingly powerful faction within the Democratic Party, that bigger corporations were better, that they would deliver more for workers and for consumers. And the party increasingly began to raise money from Wall Street and decided that small businesses didn't really matter that much and really abandoned that history and abandoned small business and began to, initially Reagan came in and started this, but Democrats really continued it, especially under Bill Clinton, who dismantled the laws that kept banks small and local and allowed tremendous consolidation in the banking industry, really set in place a lot of the policies that would ultimately lead to the financial crisis in 2008, dismantled all the regulations around consolidation and media ownership, and followed right along where Reagan had started in dismantling our anti-monopoly laws, you know, our antitrust laws, which used to be very strong and are still on the books, but we really stopped enforcing them in the 1980s.
That's
Bill
right.
Clinton doubled down on that policy, and indeed Barack Obama continued it. And so we've had this this history of incredible consolidation where you've got a few companies dominating. Lots of small businesses have fallen by the wayside. And at the same time, we've had, you know, as a consequence of that, just incredible inequality. The well-being of working people has fallen right along with the decline of small businesses.
I mean, it's interesting to consider the historical reasons for this. You know, it's true that long before Bill Clinton, the Democrats were embracing these big corporations. But there are those who say that the reasoning behind it was, well, these big companies will be easier to unionize. And that can then deliver more for consumers. And if it's going to be big companies, let's make sure they're all unionized to help the middle class stay strong. And let's focus more on, you know, helping labor within big corporations. And the consequence of it was they stopped fighting for small businesses. That's a very, I mean, obviously a crude simplification of the what happened over years. But how do you respond to that? Do you think that that was initially well-intentioned, that thinking, well, let's try to keep the unions together for these big superstores?
I think what's most striking is if you take the 30,000-foot view and look back over the last 100 years of history, and what you see is that the peak of unionization rates, which was in the 1950s when one out of every four Americans belonged to a union, that was the height of unions, and also really the height of the point where we were had the least gap in terms of income. And in the 1950s, that was a period of just incredible flourishing of small businesses. The vast majority of retail stores, for example, were local independent retail stores. Farming was done primarily by small family farms. Banking was largely in the hands of local banks. So this period of high rates of unionization and flourishing small business went together. And then both actually took a sharp downward turn beginning in the 1970s, in the late 1970s. And today we have the lowest rates of unionization and the most consolidation in the economy. And of course, small businesses are also, at a fraction of what they used to be. And so part of what I argue is that small businesses are good for working people, partly because they create competition in the labor market and that helps to lift up wages. But they're also good for working people because they disperse power. And I would say that our biggest problem right now is that corporations have, you know, a few corporations have too much power and they control our government, and they're able to use that power to push down wages and to change labor law and to you know, engage in all of these things that undermine democracy. And that the real fight is how do we challenge them? And you know, that means we really need to unite everybody who is disadvantaged by that.
Exactly. Well, then let me now that we've, you know, we're committed on this show to being fair and biased. So now that we've gone ahead and angered some of our Democratic friends, let's talk about what conservatives did, because you point out in your article at the same time, conservatives were recasting small business politics and they used it to serve their own agenda, which ultimately, as we know, served the economic elite. How did the GOP manage that, and what have been the consequences?
I found this to be a really fascinating part of the research for this article because it was a part of history that I didn't really realize. But like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you know, which is incredibly powerful, you know, they didn't used to want to deal with small business. Like they didn't want to talk about small business problems at all. They were about big business. And in the 70s and 80s, they were sort of watching as the Democrats were abandoning small businesses, and they were looking as an entity to become a much more powerful lobbying house. And so what they realized was, well, if we adopt all this rhetoric about small business, that will help us soft pedal this agenda around increasing the power of corporations, this elite agenda. And we saw that mirrored in the Republican Party. Ronald Reagan, you know, very astutely began sort of giving speeches and talking about small business as being in favor of cutting taxes, in favor of getting government out of the way, you know, all that kind of rhetoric. And it was because of this opening in a way that Democrats had created by shifting away from really championing small businesses and really telling the story about what was actually driving, you know, what was actually a threat to small business, which is corporate power.
Amazing. I mean, you know, you really point out the intelligence of making labor and small businesses natural allies. I mean, you really do lay out how they mutually do support one another. And you say strengthening unions to give working people more of a say was one way to do this. Safeguarding small businesses and family farms from the predations of Wall Street and monopolistic corporations was another. These two strategies thus fit together. I mean, I love how you phrase it. Why is small business so crucial to the future of the Democratic Party and so essential to any progressive vision of a more just society?
I think that we, you know, I think that our biggest challenge is this, you know, is this concentration of economic power. And so, you know, if we look at really what it is that people need, is that if we're going to have a more just and equitable society, we need to disperse that power. We need to distribute. More people need to have more of a say over their livelihoods, over the way our country works, over the way our economy works. And unions are one way to do that, and small business ownership is another. Both of those things put real power into the hands of ordinary people. Mm-hmm. You know, public options are another way to do that. I mean, those aren't the only tools, but essentially, I think that the Democratic Party would do well to adopt a framework where they were confronting this issue of concentrated power directly, and they were putting forward a set of policies that were designed to work together to break up that power and to put more power in the hands of ordinary people.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you talk to many Americans, I think what people are experiencing in the economy, you know, not only is the sort of hardship of how many people are struggling to get by and low wages, but it's also this sense of domination. I mean, people, you know, are controlled by their employer, by the limited circumstances of how the economy is structured and who gets to make decisions in it. And that, you know, when you begin to confront that and talk about that, that's an argument that can play anywhere. It can play in rural America. It can play in cities. It's incredibly popular. And I think it begins to be a way to actually, you know, knit people together around a different sort of vision and get to a real majority that can actually do things.
I agree. There's no way you're going to convince, you know, your uncle that Donald Trump has been conning him. But you can convince your uncle that there's better options than corporate tyranny, that the economy and the government need to be rescued from corporate tyranny.
That's right. And I think, you know, the question, you know, that's on my mind right now is are Democrats, you know, is the Biden administration, are Democrats, to the extent that they have some degree of power in the House, are they going to fight for those things? Because, you know, you can elections ultimately are only partly won on how people campaign. It's also what they do in office. And so, you know, the real test is going to come in the coming months. But I think there is a real opportunity to shift directions and to begin to expand that map beyond, you know, just cities, essentially.
Well, then let me ask you the million-dollar question. And by the way, thank you for joining us. I hope we can get you back sometime because I'd love to talk about this more. If you are just joining us, our guest is Stacey Mitchell, co-director of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Her terrific new article is Why the Left Should Ally with Small Businesses. I guess the million-dollar question is, can Democrats or a Biden administration do this? I mean, can they reach out and try to support small business and unite organized labor and small business without confronting concentrated corporate power? Or do these two steps go hand in hand? Can you help small business without going after gigantic monolithic concentrations of power that Teddy Roosevelt warned us about 100 years ago? Can both exist, or do they have to go after the giant predations?
They have to go after the big corporations. They have to rebalance the playing field. And that's, you know, that's true when you look and sort of study what is happening in different sectors of the economy. It's true when you talk to independent business owners. You know, we've done surveys at my organization, and, you know, their top issues are almost all involving various ways in which they're being screwed by Wall Street or by big corporations or blocked from markets. Amazon, you know, is a good example of that. I think one of the, you know, small businesses is sort of holds this special place in American political rhetoric. And so politicians talk about small business sort of like they talk about, you know, kind of apple pie, you know, kind of sense. And, you know, indeed, you can look back at the, you know, the Twitter feeds and so on of you know, numerous members of Congress over the weekend who put out, you know, put out statements about, oh, Small Business Saturday, need to support small business, you know, on both the right and the left. But that, you know, that doesn't mean anything. What really matters is what you do. And the incoming Biden administration has extraordinary power to address corporate concentration through the appointments that they make at the Department of Justice and the Antitrust Division, and also crucially at the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission has a lot of, it's an independent agency with a lot of authority, and they could directly take on some of the abusive practices that we've seen by Amazon, by Tyson Foods, you know, these giant monopolies that are really harmful to workers and really harmful to small businesses.
Stacey Mitchell, I hope we can get you back on the show. I'd love to go even deeper with this. The new article is in the new issue of The Nation, Why the Left Should Ally with Small Business. And how do our listeners follow you online?
So I'm on Twitter. It's Stacey F. Mitchell. And also our website is the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. That's ILSR.org. And thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Please come join us again. I've already retweeted the article, and we'll be right back after this on SiriusXM Progress.